This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi tamoto, MPR. If you're a fan of MPR, listening to our podcasts and live stream has never been easier. Just search for accessmedia.nz on the App Store or Google Play and download the app with the kiwifruit logo. Once you've got it, pick Manawatu People's Radio from the list of stations and go find your new favourite show.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future. Today we have with us
Iola Hegarty,
Alison Milden,
and I'm Stuart Burks. Okay, now, Iola, you've been developing a batch or a second home at Foxton Beach?
Well, I think in the old days you would have called it a batch, but of course now you, yes, the development really is to make it into something which is more like a second home. And the reason to do this, or the reason that lots of people have done, and I suspect will continue to do, is because it's a lifestyle thing at the beach, which is different to living in town. A lot of people, of course, looking maybe to live permanently at these places, whereas some years ago, that probably was...
So the traditional batch was more like a small sort of one-room place?
Or? Well, the traditional batch, you know, maybe had two bedrooms, but it was probably something that granddad and dad and uncles had knocked up on a beach section without planning permission, without all those codes of compliance and things that have become so necessary. And really were just fun places to go and spend your holidays. That's certainly didn't expect to be wallpapering and painting.
So it's more like a functional small house.
It's a functional cottage. Small house, yeah. Cottage, yes. Yeah.
So who would have this? It'd be families for holiday, and if the children grow up, then several can share it at, or take it at different times? Or?
Well, when I was a child growing up in Wellington, I think almost every family had a beach property that they could go to during the holidays.
There's a lot around Taupo as well, aren't there?
Yeah, Taupo. Well, of course, you're a bit more... upmarket, if you had a place at Taupo.
Oh, okay.
And
of
course,
colder water though.
And the Rotorua Lakes. Now, that was really, really, you're getting into the posh stuff there. Okay. But it was, you know, lots of people, my school friends, their parents had places at Raumati South.
So they'd have that rather than caravans, say?
Caravans sort of became more popular, probably late 50s, I think, because, you know, I'm talking more the family...
Well, of course, they wouldn't have all the family cars to tow caravans when you were young. Yeah.
No, that's right, Stuart, thank you. Yes. Of course, a lot more depends on public transport, I think, in those days.
Yeah,
for big families as well. Yeah. Yeah, but it was very much the thing, and I think I bought a little beach house at Hamatangi Beach in 1989 and paid $15,000 for it.
Okay.
So, you know, when you think about...
So were they very crowded or close to packed in?
No,
you got quite a bit of land with each one?
The Hamatangi Beach house, quarter acre section,
okay.
Which was almost the norm for any subdivision.
Now that's interesting, because now people like, some people, there's the idea of the townhouse because there's not the garden to care for and so on. Is it a big problem caring for your garden in town and then a quarter acre section somewhere else?
Well, yes, it could be. I think that's more the idea of city living, that you're having, if you don't have a garden in town, but you have a place that you opt to in the country.
Yeah.
But I actually was discussing this with a friend in Hamilton. Hamilton, in the 70s, we owned a house on a quarter acre section, and up there at the time we wanted to extend the house, and you couldn't build on the house more than, you couldn't cover more than a third of the size of the section with any buildings. Now, we actually had to go up on the house, build up rather than set out. So it stuns and amazes me that now in Hamilton, that there would be, if that house that we put up, they took that off, there would be then at least three properties would be going onto that section.
And moved to infill. So in those days with the quarter acre section, were you using that to grow vegetables and things?
Absolutely, and fruit trees. So
that's because of no work at the weekends, and you've got more free time to do that, or there'd be one income earner and the other one could be growing things, or?
Well, I think it was just the norm. If you had a quarter acre section, you definitely had your vegetable garden. And you definitely had your fruit trees, and you had all the things that, required.
But you had time to do all that as well, I suppose. Or?
Well, the fathers had the time to do all that.
That's because they had wives, or the mother was at home doing a lot of the other stuff.
A lot of the other time, yeah.
Okay, so So was there a stronger family life then, do you think?
I think it was much, in my view, much stronger family life, much more interaction with the children, what they were doing.
Because there was the Kiwi weekend then as well, and all the shops were... Now, what was it? If you hadn't gone to the bank by about 3 o'clock on a Friday afternoon, you could have no money to buy anything from the dairies over the weekend, and the other places were closed anyway.
That's right.
But there was lots of sport, and people were free for
sports,
that.
Sports and...
Wasn't it a limited range of activities, so various sports could be very heavily subscribed, whereas now there's a wide range of options as well.
Well, I think that too, but I think there was also a lot more community things organised, like, as a child, I was very much into going to the park and listening to the brass bands. Mm-hmm. I used to think that was just really wonderful, and of course there'd be the Scottish Highland Flings and all of those sorts of things that were there. So it was all this sort of free, interactive.
Whereas the younger generation now, if they were put in that situation, there's so little going on, they can't do all the things that they'd normally do.
Isn't it amazing? But but certainly the things that community picnics and things that were.
So it's a lot more sort of do it yourself rather than things provided for you and you get together with.
I think country life was quite different.
Yes.
In the sense that we didn't. If you were on a farm, there was not much time you could go on a holiday because. Your father or parents were busy all year round. So my mother decided that we should have a holiday every year. So we'd go on holiday in May because that was more a downtime on the farm, and we didn't have a batch. We would rent a place.
Yes.
So we used to initially... rent a batch at Mount Maunganui.
Well, so you go a fair distance there?
Yes.
Yeah. Because there was a lot of, I know we did some recording of local farming families where, say, if it was a dairy farm, the men would stay on the farm, milk the cows. The mother and kids would be at the campground at Foxton Beach. And he'd probably go out, join them during the day, go back to do the milking and so on.
Yes,
and they'd spend most of the summer at Foxton Beach.
Sheep farming, so May was the
time with May.
But not quite the same weather, though. Do you regret that? Would you rather have had a summer holiday?
No, these were the most incredible, wonderful holidays.
So what would you do?
And the batch we rented, we all slept... in one big room, bunks, and a kitchen, and a bathroom. That was it. Mm. And, just fantastic.
So what
but
did you
very
do?
Very family. Mm. So the beach, tiddler fishing competitions off the jetty, just shell collecting, climbing Mount Maunganui, going out to other beaches, which are now hugely overpopulated, were just empty then. Marvellous.
Well, yeah, I was saying May, I suppose that would be.
No housing.
Yeah. Oh,
just,
I see.
Just bare beach and sand.
What about safety then? Because the idea of water safety and rips and so on.
We all learned to swim at school. And
swimming, you were taught about how to survive in rips and rivers, say, because we've just had four drownings in the river.
I expect just, my parents gave us guidance. Well, we'd go river swimming. Well,
they just have bigger families then, so spare one.
No, and for us, like the weekend, you didn't. Our mother used to say, if you ever said, "I'm bored," she would say, "You can always read a book." But you were really bored because you got up on a Saturday morning. You might have some jobs.
You were really bored, or you were rarely bored?
Rarely.
Rarely.
Very rarely. Yes, and you jump on your bike. And you just disappear. Your parents didn't say, "Oh, where are you going? Be careful, blah, 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 blah." You just did your thing. They didn't worry. As long as you came home in time for tea, that was
all that was required. But I think
down to the river.
So the problem now is parents worry too much about their children.
Oh, gosh, look, we had
helicopter
grazed knees, stubbed toes, constantly falling out of trees.
And those and who survived is okay.
Rushed off to a doctor because you had a bit of a sniffle or a sore ear. Your mother looked after you.
But successfully.
Successfully.
Looking back, think about school holidays, and it seemed to be that we did particular things at particular times of the year, depending on the holidays. So, when we lived in Christchurch, the August school holidays was always up the mountain for the kids, skiing and doing those sorts of things. It just seemed to be that there were different options for different times of the year.
But it's the same for food, isn't it? We used to eat seasonally.
Yes.
And were we unhappy because of that? Are we happier now because you can have all this stuff?
Whenever you want
all these things?
Future?
Yeah. I doubt it.
No, there's no sense of achievement.
I think you are fitter, but healthier.
But you're talking about batches and why I think they were very important for families or a place to get away to, because normally you would have had, say, three or four members of the same extended family all coming to share.
I mean, different groups. Your cousins would be there with you and your uncle and aunt.
Like, my sons, when we lived in Christchurch, went off to mountaineering school with Guy Dingle, but my nephew came down from Wellington and also joined them. So that those extended family ties were there and became quite strong, whereas I think there's much more probably isolation of families. But
probably with two working parents there's not that, because there was the idea that if the guy's working and so his contacts sort of work contacts, but the wife and mother through the schools and church and local, that was the family connections and the local community connections, and so that can pull things together in a way that work links just don't do in the same way.
Well, you did have to work at that as a woman staying at home.
Yeah, precisely. That's what I mean. They can put in the effort, whereas now if both parents are working, they don't have time to do that. Or they try to make contact with other people and they're busy with all that stuff as well. And now also there's so many activities for children, the idea is so much of it is organised. They finish this, they finish school, they go home, then they've got to go off to the music class, then there's the sports training, then there's the this, and so on. So it's a far more structured life, probably.
Yes. And I sort of get the feeling with all the structured after-school things for children that it's almost giving the parents a bit of a sense that they're actually not quite up to the play if their children aren't getting all these things. Or
well, I suppose part of it as well is, are you fitting, are you being part of the society? This is the relative deprivation concept of poverty. Can you fit in with the normal activities of society? So if all the other kids, if all your kids' friends are doing those activities, then if yours aren't, then they're not there with their friends. So the friendships aren't so strong. Those kids will be friends with others who are involved in those activities, and yours are getting left out of it. So, you know, you need to be participating in what the norm is, and if that's the norm, you're locked into it, which is a problem.
I think there's a loss of resilience, a loss of...
There's a loss of independence.
Independence, a loss of being able to look after yourself.
There was an interesting observation that was made at one stage with all the organised sport. There'd be certain kids who would be made captain of the team and so on and so forth. And then there was this observation with a group of kids. They just left them to do things on their own. And they found it wasn't the ones who'd normally been made captain of the team or whatever who were leading. It was some of the other kids who were sort of the natural leaders, but that hadn't come out in the organised activities, which was quite interesting.
I was always the last to be picked for a team.
Yes.
But on your own, you'd be up trees protesting.
No. Well, tree climbing for sure. Tree climbing, real independence, real self.
Yes, because, you know, we were talking the other day, another group of us, the same age cohort, and how, our children... Yeah, used to be on their bikes, as you said, Alison, and so gone for the day.
Was it common to have broken arms, broken legs, that sort of thing?
Well, it's almost like a rite of passage, wasn't it? That, you know, you had to have a broken arm or something.
We drank milk. Lots of it. And nobody has ever had a broken limb in our family.
Well, that doesn't affect breakage, it affects probably...
God, strong,
you've not fallen, so you'd fall out of trees, but nothing would break.
Well, actually, I didn't really...
You're from a very heavily boned family.
Yes. That was quite good. The Fitzherbert Avenue tree protest was really good.
Yes.
Because as a child, I had climbed trees.
Yes, yes.
And fearlessly. But over the years, I had developed vertigo was afraid of heights. And the Fitzherbert Avenue tree protest cured me. I had to be able to go up the tree, and something bigger than myself overcame vertigo, and that meant I could start climbing on my roof at home.
Now, this was how long ago now, the tree protest?
It's 25 years.
25 years. So a lot of people won't know about that. What was the Fitzherbert Avenue tree protest?
What was it?
Yes.
It was an attempt... by a very strong community, people, objective to retain the avenue as a canopy of trees.
So there was a row of trees closer into the road itself. Was it on both sides or just one side?
Both sides
of Fitzherbert Avenue, just before the bridge, there were two... big
all
rows
the way
of trees.
From the bridge to the square.
To the square. Right the way down.
And of course, cyclists, of which there were many in those days, would drive a cycle between the footpath and the trees.
Mm.
And the cars were on the road.
Except for those. Now, that can be very dangerous because you're driving a car out of one of the side streets. And a cyclist can come down that narrow area between the trees, and it's very hard to see
but
them.
But then I think cyclists, perhaps, and drivers were a little less. Perhaps they were more cautious.
Mm-hmm.
I don't recall. The only accident I can recall was the trees outside opposite Girls High, which were in fact the best specimens of the Fitzherbert Avenue trees. One day they were just gone. Even though they were protected trees, they were gone. Why were they gone? I rang the city councillor. Why has this happened? Oh, because a person who it turned out was alcoholically
assisted
had stepped out from behind a tree into the road and someone had hit them. And so I had this half-hour conversation about how people have to be kept safe and protected. So down came the trees without any consent.
So you were up a tree, and this wasn't because it wasn't, hey, here's an excuse for me now as an adult to climb trees. You were there for protest to stop it. Now, would that work?
The way I got up the tree the first time was I'd gone to dinner. Doug and I had gone to dinner with friends in Ashurst, and it was getting pretty late, and there was a phone call to say Ali was Mark Bell Booth. I wonder if you'd be free to go up a tree. I'm on the phone to the radio station, and I have to honestly be able to say someone's up the tree. So we rushed home from Ashurst. I got changed. There I was in the middle of the night, scared just to go up that little wee bit. There was a ladder, etc. I climbed up, and that was then possible for Mark to say to the radio station someone was up the tree and be honest. And then by daylight, heaps of people came. So that's how.
There was a write-up about that, and your picture was in the paper on page 2 of the Manawatu Standard of the 15th of January 2022, this year.
Yes, that's me, but it was just labelled as an unnamed protester. But that was me.
But the effect was that they still just cut the trees down.
Yeah, we didn't win.
The interesting thing about that, though, Alison, was that the move to cut the trees down had actually come up in the district plan about 5 years previously.
Even earlier. They'd been gunning for the trees.
And it had, because it had come to the ward committee meeting that had, it was probably more than 5 years prior to it happening, but it was interesting that it had actually been passed then unanimously by the council, and that would happen.
Yeah.
And so that the protest then only happened once it was going to be
a different kind of protest.
Yes.
Has been happening from the beginning. I was not around, but before, there was a strong group of people constantly trying to.
But one observation that some people did have, though, once the trees were down, that was that it gave a much better view of that whole row of palm trees that were behind the trees that were cut down.
Just a tiny little wee segment.
Okay. That they've been replaced, and how do you feel about them now?
Well, it could have been worse, because I think they were not going to replant at all.
So should it be called an avenue?
No, it's not really an avenue. And in fact, some of the trees we pushed, they were quite new trees, and we pushed the council, or the council was pushed, to replant them right on the corner of Hughes Avenue and the bridge. So those lovely flourishing replants, transplants from that avenue.
Yes. Mm.
But that wouldn't have happened if there had not been protest.
I think that the... though there might have been a little bit of advertising about things that were happening in those days, I think there's even less now, so we have less understanding about what's in the future.
But there's a bit more tree planting in the streets, though, isn't there? I think there's more awareness of the importance of trees in cities than there used to be.
Because there's so much infill housing.
Are they actually the ideal trees that we should be planting, which are getting planted? You know, should we be looking more to biodiversity and what used to be here rather than having English specimens?
More natives. Mm. Yes, so probably. Except the one problem with natives is they're the sort that basically grow in a bush environment, close to a lot of other trees with shelter and so on, then they're not so suitable for lightning
tree. Okay.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.mpr.nz/donate.